Looks like there's a few people here interested in polyurethane airplanes. I don't have anything prepared to say today. Usually if I do, there's so many questions we never even get into that part. So all I can say is that we brought the KR2 up here to the tent for anybody to look at. You know how it's made. Everybody here does by now. Polyurethane wings covered with Dynel and epoxy, and top of the fuselage is the same way. Cowling, spinner, and so on like that. And, of course, the entire tail. Several people have been asking me about how come we don't make cowls for this. The cowl on our KR1 we just made a couple of days ago, it didn't fit. We changed the engines on it. It's actually a 1700 on there right now. It turned out it's about 3 inches wider than the 36 horse and 5 inches longer. So we made a new cowl for it. We spent about 2 days on it. Actually, if you look at it close, you can tell we did a fast job on it. Still, it takes about $15 worth of materials to make one, and it's not really that much labor to it. Sure, a lot easier than paying over $100 for a factory-made fiberglass one. Actually, it comes out a lot lighter, too. I think the best way to start out this way, on this kind of a talk, is just ask questions. Well, we're not getting it yet, mainly because we're still having engine problems. I haven't got that one running too good yet. It's a home brew. I should have bought somebody else's engine on it, but that's the problem with saving a few bucks. It turned out it didn't save anything. We're still playing with it. I can get 200 really, burning it absolute flat out. You can't leave it there, though. What I want to do is get it running good enough to where I can do it at high altitude at cruise RPM. Yes. Yes, the one. No, the two, I can get 180 out of it flat out at high altitude where you can run that way continuously. But I to do it really continuously, I need an oil cooler. I don't have one on right now. And what I do is I'll run it there at about 12,500 feet flat out until the oil temperature gets to 250 degrees, and then I just back off. If I had an oil cooler, I could probably run there continuously. Right now, I'm using it's 52 inches diameter and 65 inches of pitch. That's what's on there right now. At that pitch, at 12,500 feet, it'll run throughout 180 at 3,100 RPM.
If you're
The main advantage of the warranty prop is that he makes a thinner blade than the fixed pitch ones. 3,100 for max cruise. Well, here's the advantage of that thin blade is that I think it actually stalls when you run it up on the ground because I can get 2,800 RPM, but as soon as I start rolling, it falls off. When I at takeoff speed of around 60, it's down to about 2,400. And then as I accelerate, it goes back up again from there. Pardon? Well, it's actually turns out that the stall on the blades is a desirable feature. Because it gives you more RPM. It doesn't stall in flight. As soon as you get above 70, there's no way you can stall the propeller. Well, my 1834 running it on a dynamometer shows 60 horsepower. Oh, I don't know. I'm running it redline now. So what it would do is just give you more rate of climb at a higher gross weight. On mine, when I'm alone, full fuel and me alone in it, it grosses out around 650 pounds. So I have around 1,300 feet a minute rate of climb at 120 indicated. That's with me alone. With two people in it, two 160-pound people in it, we were getting 900 feet a minute. The KR1 right now holds 55 gallons usable, so it has 14 hours range. Yes. No, we didn't fly it out. We're still having engine problems and didn't trust it. And we were bringing the trailer anyway, so we put both airplanes on it. No, actually, building those wet wings using this system is real simple. I might as well go into that. Here's what we did. We had the wings built already. So we just turned them upside down, cut out the entire section between the spars from the tip plywood rib to the inboard rib, which is, in this case, after it's cut off the airplane, is a polyurethane rib. Then we just glassed the entire inside. We sanded the top skin to where it's only about 3/8 of an inch thick to half an inch thick. And then laid a layer of Dynel on it, on the whole thing, and all across the spars to seal it. Then we epoxied in a plastic bottle top, sawed out the middle. That made the filler cap, actually the top of the gas tank. And then we took the bottle itself, sawed the neck off, filled it with epoxy, and then screwed that on, and then polished the whole thing off to the airfoil shape. Then I put a couple of slots and made a little key to open it up. Here it is. See, if this fits in the slots, you can unscrew it right out on each gas cap. Then what we did was we cut a piece of polyurethane sheeting and cut it to fit the entire hole. It was something like 5 feet by almost 2 feet. Cut it to fit, glassed the inside, what would be the inside of it, just laid it out and glassed it, polished it all smooth after it was hard, then laid a couple of strips of Dynel and epoxy soft on this and just pushed it right in. Actually, we added a few baffles, too, two baffles. Just how they were made was we glued in sheets of foam, glassed one side with three layers, then sanded out the foam, then cut our notches for the fuel to flow through. And it had a lip on the bottom. So when you put this sheet on, it epoxied right onto these lips on the two they made center ribs. Then now after all this cured, we sanded the foam back down to the airfoil shape. It actually stuck up a quarter of an inch, a little more than a quarter of an inch, out of the bottom of the wing. We sanded that all down to shape, so that came out less than half an inch thick also. And just reglassed the whole bottom of the wing. That's right. The whole with the wing upside down on the workbench. Came out that the KR-1 wings held 22 gallons each. And by the way, I know of two KR-2s in flying condition right now in California. They did this on the KR-2 wings. And the total fuel on both of these came out 70 gallons.
How are you transferring your fuel?
I have a fuel line that's epoxied inside each wing that goes to the bottom rear corner, inboard corner. And it just sticks out between the spars at where the attach fittings are. And right there, I have a little electric model airplane fuel pump that it just plugs into, and that pumps it to the top tank anytime I turn it on. I've got another way of doing it we're thinking of doing as soon as I get back, and that on the Chevrolet Vega and the Buick Rivieras have a built-in electric fuel pump that's inside the tank. And it's a real light one, and they only cost $13. And I was thinking of molding these right inside the tank on each one of them, and then all you have is a fuel line and two wires coming out. You just plug on the wires and connect that fuel line, and anytime you turn it on, it'll pump to the top tank. They also have a built-in check valve, so you don't even need a shut-off or anything. So I've been thinking, I just found out about it. I saw one. I bought one. Yes, sir. Well, the disadvantage of that is that you have to leave it on all the time. See, this way you just refill the top tank every so often it gets down about halfway. Just keep topping it. Yeah, but then you have to drive it. Yeah, if you had a mechanical pump. The engine, none of my engines have any mechanical pumps. Yeah, we could put one on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, leaving the sides vertical? I don't think it'd make that much difference. We just... Yes, it is. It when you get done, it makes it look like there's more compound curves. That's the main thing. And it's actually slab-sided. Sure. The question in that case was, should he leave the sides vertical? In the plans, they actually slope out as it goes up. And this was done mostly for looks. I don't think it'll affect the performance that much. Yes, sir. Yes. Well, the starter is actually an awful lot of weight. I noticed on Wix it added 60 pounds. And that's like 10% of the gross weight on that airplane, just to add a starter. So I really think unless we find a better way of doing it, like using one of these little Honda geared starters, we leave it off. Yeah. Well, we're having problems with it right now. I don't know. I think we loaded it up with dirt on the trip out or something. We're going to need to clean it out.
far as landing weight is concerned?
Yes. Actually, there's no reason to land it with the wings full of fuel. It's strictly for cross-country, and I wouldn't like to land it at 750 pounds, not the KR-1. It would really be spongy. But with 55 gallons of fuel and me in it, I'm only up to 750 pounds, so it's really not that bad. The takeoff performance would still be pretty good, especially with the bigger engine that I've got in now. The rate of climb probably wouldn't be too much with a little 36 I used to have in it. It's 750 pounds? I don't think it would be much over 400 feet. It used to be, right, well, even with a little 36 horse in it, I used to get off in about 150, 200 feet. That 36 horse was a really good economical engine. You ran it, I used to run it flat out firewall. It burned 2.7 gallons an hour. And it was, and if you throttle it back to 1.5, it still flew beautiful. Just playing around on a Sunday was the cheapest way to go. Now you put these big 1834s in, that's not the case. You leave them firewall and you can burn 5 gallons an hour. And even throttle back, they seem to burn 4. Or close to 4. They're nowhere near as economical. I got a misfire. It seems to be running on 3 cylinders. Oh, you mean in regular problems? Well, in the wintertime, I don't even have that problem. That's why I never got around to putting an oil cooler on. Normally, on a long climb out, in hot weather, as the oil temperature starts up, I'll just level off for a while and let it go back down, and then continue the climb. Well, I can't say anything because I haven't got one. I'll let him experiment with it. Yes, sir. Oh, the firewall beef up for the bigger engine on a KR-1. Actually, what we did was, it's made as a cross member with a top shelf, the way it is in the plans. All we did was we added a bottom shelf underneath that cross member. That's the only difference. And got a good glue joint in the side frames. With stringer, it added extra stringers on the side. That's right, the piece on the top. We added another one underneath that to make it a C-shaped frame across the front, right behind the firewall. That there, yes. That's the only change. Mainly, well, this engine is roughly 45 pounds heavier than the 36 horse was. It's considerably bigger. The cheeks really look bigger to me. 3 inches wider and 6 inches longer. Oops, okay. Go ahead. Okay. The flight characteristics on these airplanes. Well, the first time I flew the KR-1, I had 60 hours total time, and all of it was Cessna 150 time. So what I did was I just taxied it for two or three days. I was planning on taxiing it for a couple of weeks, but it got airborne a few times, so I just said, the heck with it, let's go. So,
what about crosswind components?
Well, the KR-1, I got to where I figured I could take any crosswind, and one day I was taking off with a 90-degree, 45-knot gust crosswind, and I lost it. It ran me right into a fence. That was happening at Flay Bob Airport a little over a year ago. So I was getting too sure of it. So I would say be more careful. It took a big rebuild job after that one. It got to where I was handling worse and worse ones right along, and it got to where I didn't care what it was when I took off. Yes, sir. Yes. The question is, did I use 2 layers on the inside of the wing tanks? I did, but I think it was a mistake. I think 1 layer would have been plenty adequate, providing you go back and check all the pinholes before you close it up. Well, I think it was because he used a more brittle epoxy. We've got a more flexible kind now that we've never had that problem. The fix, though, was just to fix the cracks, and it doesn't crack again in the same place. But he hasn't had the problem again. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Fred Keller about a month ago, and he was planning on flying from Anchorage, Alaska to Oshkosh this week, and I haven't heard any more from him. So I imagine he's on the road right now, or I should say in the air. I think so. I haven't used theirs, but I think it's as good as ours. Yes, sir. They've talked about it, but so far they haven't. But there's several other manufacturers, too. We've got no problems getting it, getting Dynel. The question is, can we get Dynel? And there seems to be no shortage right now. No, I don't think there will ever be a shortage of polyurethane foam. It's used mainly for building construction and for insulating and fireproofing buildings. That's the way it's used in the West Coast, and it's plenty plentiful anywhere. Yes. Has anybody spun a KR1? Not that I know of. I've done, you know, I've gone out and done stalls in every configuration. More than one time, I sort of worked up the nerve to kick a little rudder just through the brake, and I got quarter of a turn a couple times, then kicked it out immediately when I chickened out. But that was all. I've actually never been in a spin in my life, so in any airplane. So I haven't quite worked up the nerve to do it myself. When we were running the flight tests, one of the other guys flying it wanted to spin it, but I didn't let him. Yes, sir. I've eliminated the lightning, major modifications in the plans. Well, I've eliminated the lightning holes because that's where we broke the landing gear in that, when it went in that ditch in Kansas. It broke right through those holes. Maybe that's a good deal. I don't know. If it hadn't have broken, maybe it might have flipped it upside down. See, so what's the, whether you do it or not, I don't know. I'd just as soon have the landing gear break off on a major impact, you know, like running into a ditch or something, than have the airplane turn upside down. I think it's less damage in the long run. A lot easier to fix, anyway. Okay. The question... I see. The question is on the Horner tips, making a more round front end and then concave, more concave further back. I think as long as you do have that concave section in there, it's going to be plenty efficient, far more than just a flat end plate or anything like that. So I don't think it'll matter that much. Sure. Ooh, where was it? Oh, right. Yes. Well, the stresses on this are far lower than a stress on a boat where you might snag it. Yes, I know they used to build really high-performance boats out of it, and well, some places still do. There's a place in New York still making them that way. But if you hit something really hard in one point, you can snag it. On an airplane, I don't think there's that much problem. Well, I've sure done that, and I haven't had that problem. I've bashed wingtips and so on like that. Well, I haven't found the problem at all. Matter of fact, I found that the impact resistance on the Dynel and epoxy is far better than fiberglass. Fiberglass tends to shatter if you impact it, where this just absorbs most of it. It's more resilient. There's a lot more stretch before you do actually knock a hole in it. The glide ratio on the KR2 is roughly the same with 2 or 1. It's just that the glide speed is higher. The best glide speed on when I'm alone is around 70, and with two people in, it's probably around 85. It's still better than 15-1 or a good 15-1. That actually is a problem on short field landings. The field I fly out of is 1,600 feet and has a 25-foot wall across the approach end, mainly to keep people high, and it's made out of railroad track, so it tends to keep everybody way high. But the problem is, if you come over at 100 feet over that, and with a 15-1 glide ratio, you've lost 1,500 feet, and the thing's only 1,600 feet long. So I can't get it stopped in that last 100 feet. So what I have to do is just cut it real close all the time. But I found that if you slip it, it goes down pretty good. Normal rate of descent, power off, is 350, 400 feet a minute. If I hold full right rudder and come down the left wing, which gives you beautiful visibility too, by the way, even though you're holding the speed down, I can get it up to 800 feet a minute. So that's how I normally land now when I'm going to short fields like that. Yes, sir.
You're talking about your
Yes. Well, the best way to go on this type of airplane is spoilers, not flaps. The only problem is it adds enough complexity that it'll probably turn off a lot of the real amateur builders. Anything like that that they don't know anything about would turn them off. So I've been keeping it as simple as possible. So right now I've left them off. But a spoiler arrangement would be really handy, especially on the inboard section. That's all you'd really need, have a door come up. And well, they wouldn't. It wouldn't run all the way out. It may. That's another possibility. You know, if flight tests would bear this out, it's a good thing, a good reason that it, or a good chance that it would spoil the flow over your elevator. And right now, elevator response is really good, even at 40 indicated. So I would rather not even fool with them the way it is now. It's just a matter of learning how to slip, and you can get around all the problems with it. Since I learned how to slip the thing, I've haven't had any problems at all. Oh, the lightning holes in the wood ribs? Well, it's just a matter of cutting some holes, that's all, mainly to get cables through or getting the landing gear bar through, things like that. You don't really need anything. Yes. Yeah, actually, on my outer rib on the KR2, I didn't even cut any holes. On the one, I did. But it got, it's the wing tips have been bashed a few times anyway, and I never did actually glue it back together. I just fixed the skin. When we put in the wing tanks, though, we glass the whole inside, so it's essentially that's a rib. Okay, the question is, what about the temperature of the skin, leaving it out in the sun and so on? Normally, I keep the airplane hangared, and it only takes 15 minutes to take the wings off to take it home. But I think it's a really good idea to paint these white, all of them, white or silver, to reflect it. The dull black or anything like that on top for trim, when you lay your hand on it out in the sun, boy, it'll really burn you. But I know I've gotten some really high temperatures inside my cowl, and I haven't had any problems. There's one spot where I've had it touch an exhaust pipe right on the left side, the left exhaust pipe in the front. If you notice, we drilled some small holes to let some air through there. Before that, we used to smell something burning every time I landed. And it is a little charred inside right where it was brushing on it. Actually, I got a quarter of an inch clearance right now and some tiny drill holes in there, and that cured the problem. It hasn't charred anymore. No, it may eventually. It's a matter of time of how long it will deteriorate the foam. Yes. Yeah, it's mainly ultraviolet and so on. But I think the white paint is the best protection. Coat of white paint on there first, then put anything on, any trim, and keep the trim to a minimum. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, he wants to know if I did anything to structurally change the airplanes when I went to the larger VW engines. Actually, adding wing tanks does make the wings a lot stronger, though I don't know if you really need that for the larger engine. That's the only structural change we made, and it wasn't for structure. The wing tanks really make that a strong wing. No change in the fuselage, not except around the firewall. We added some beef there. We didn't change anything further after that. We made the seat a little stronger. That's about it. Oh, that's a good question. That's something I wanted to bring up. The question is, what about location landing gear for heavier weights? If you plan on flying a KR2 much over 800 pounds, I would suggest moving instead of bolting these on the ends of that 5-foot bar, moving them in an inch on each side. This will make the landing gear quite a bit stiffer. It's at 800 pounds and above, or about, say at 900 pounds, the way it is right now, it's a little spongy on the gear. Landing at that weight. No, that's okay. Forward CG is okay. It's just a matter of moving them in to make a stiffer bar. I don't have that on mine, but up to 800 pounds, it's great just the way it is. Above that, it's too soft, especially in rough ground. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, he wants to know about covering aileron, elevator stops, so on like that. The ailerons actually have stops because it's the one that goes down, it just closes up the gap completely, and it's a solid stop. So they're built in. On my elevator, the arm that the cables are hooked to hit the vertical spar. see. So, as a matter of fact, to get more travel, I had to actually notch out the spar a little bit with a power file to set them. So, no, I didn't have any problems having stops. Now, the rudder, what I did was, on the actual bottom hinge, it actually closes up completely and it makes a stop. But that's a good idea to have stops. I didn't mention it in the plans, I'll admit. Okay. The question is on surface movement on all the controls. On my ailerons, I like looking at the outboard tip. It works best if you can get about over an inch and a half up. Going down, if you've got anything over half an inch, it's fine. Yes, on the outboard tip. On the ailerons, and if you've got that arm, that control arm that the push rod is connected to, pointing forward, it's about 30 degrees off from forward. It'll work out this way. I notice on that P-51 replica of the KR-1, it doesn't seem to work that way. I don't know what the angle said, and I haven't looked at it. But I notice on his left aileron, he has no up at all. And that scares me. Plus or minus 30 degrees on everything is fine. If you can't get that much down elevator, it's okay, because I don't think you ever need over 10 degrees down elevator. At least I never have had it. But 30 up is fine. That gives you, that way you can stall at any speed. If you don't have 30 degrees, like Fred Keller's had roughly 20 degrees, you really got to stall the airplane, you've really got to use a lot of power and get the nose up to make it stall. It's sort of a forced stall. If you've got 30 degrees, you can stall it at anything. You just hold it all the way back and wait till it stops and it'll fall through. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just trying to get a real good stall. You need the 30 degrees. Rudder, if you got plus or minus 30 degrees, it's a lot easier to get on the rudder. Well, stall characteristics are actually taking care of themselves if you have the 3 degrees of twist in the wings. Well, that's it. No. On stall characteristics, actually just the differential ailerons and the wing twist is probably what makes it so easy to handle through the stall. I've done stalls every configuration they can think of, in tight turns, anything, and all that happens if you stall it in a tight turn is the top wing falls first, and it holds that heading until you until it recovers, then it goes into the turn again, even though I'm holding the turn all the way through the stall. Yes. During a stall in a tight turn?
Yeah.
Well, you don't even have to. I just hold it, and it stalls straight ahead. It holds that heading, and then goes back into the stall after it goes back into the turn after it completes the stall. As soon as it recovers, it does it all by itself. You don't have to do anything. If you let go, of course, it pulls out straight ahead. It doesn't go back into the turn. Yes. Landing gear on rough sod. Actually, it's a fairly soft riding airplane in the rough. I've run into some really rough ground a few times by accident. It felt fairly soft. It was surprising without doing anything. Oh, no. Well, if you run into really rough ground where the flexing is more than you have room for in the wings, you can pop holes in the wings. I did that on my KR-1 year before last here. I landed it alongside the runway that time when that Stagger Wing Beach blew me off the runway. So I just dumped it in the field because I had bashed a wingtip and I thought I had broken a wing. So I just put it down right where I was and I put it in the field there. And I hit hard enough to where I flexed the gear far enough that I punched two holes in the tops of the wings. Yes. Oh, what to do if you plan on operating us a really rough field? Well, I'd do the same thing I was going to do on if you're going to increase the weight. Move the gear in 1 inch on each side. Saw the excess off. In other words, make a stiffer landing gear. Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. It may. Yes, it might make it harder to handle on smooth runways, so on like that. But well, that putting a stiffer bar in there adds too much to the weight. See, the whole thing to do on most all my modifications. Anytime I modify something, I look at taking something off rather than add something on. I know most everybody does the opposite. Well, 70-75 T6, I think, is the lightest structural material you can get. A hollow tube, well, it might be kind of hard. You might have high stresses where the bolts are, someone like that. It would take too much experiment. Yes. The question was, how about going to some other kind of a tight landing gear bar, like a hollow tube? But I think the stresses would be too high around bolt holes and so on like that. And the straight bar is the most economical way of going.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of the fellows said that they've had problems with that type of tailwheel. Are you going into a different type of tailwheel, or are you using the same one on your prototype out there now?
Both prototypes out there have the original tailwheels. I haven't ruined one. One of them I got cut up pretty well on a one time, but I didn't change. I changed the wheel itself, but I didn't change anything else. It's still all the bracketry and so on like that. We just replaced the wheel. I was running through the rough, and it cut it open. It was on the KR2 one time. But the KR1 still has the original. I see. Did yours break through the lightning? Well, all you did was you landed and they broke off both landing gear legs. I see.
But yeah. The reason why I mentioned it, I used it off of a rough tube like this here a couple of times. The first landing was all right. The second takeoff there, I had a little problem latching my gear. The third one, I stood on my gear to get it retracted, then I knew what was happening, but I had to land.
Well, I don't know offhand. I'd have to look at the landing gears themselves. I see. Yeah, it could have been. I see. Yeah, we actually have changed the castings in the last 2 months. Last month and a half. Yeah, I don't have them on my airplane. Mine still has the old ones. But all the new kits have a heavier, actually it's shaped different. The front end is closed off. Right, it's quite a bit stronger. We are worried that if somebody does hit something solid, that it might not break off. It might flip the airplane upside down. I guess the fix on that is to make sure is to use weaker bolts where you bolt it to the bar. We're using quarter-inch bolts right now. I don't know if there's any way of breaking those bolts. I think what will happen now is actually have some way of having the latches fail on a high impact. And this way, all that happens is you retract the gear. Oh, I see.
I got a latch or a safety lock on now. It's very simple and it's all
sure.
And no,
here's a man flying his, what is it, KR1 or 2?
KR1.
KR1 off a rough field. And he likes it, but he has busted his landing gear one time, but he's got to fix now. Yeah, do you have any problems getting the new gear legs?
Pardon?
Do you have any problems getting the new gear legs?
New gear legs?
Yeah.
No, I repaired mine.
Oh, you repaired them. Oh, I see. Because I was going to say, evidently someone else broke his gear legs, too, that's been flying regular, and we never did get an order for new gear legs. So I was just wondering, evidently everybody's repairing them when they do break them. Yes? Yeah. The angle of what? Oh, the landing gear leg on the bar itself? Well, yeah, okay, actually tilting it forward a little bit. Well, you can do that without actually changing changing it with a wedge. It's how you set your latches. It's all a matter of filing the metal and not setting that up. If you got a little bit, got them forward a little bit more, it probably would help considerably. It'd take a lot of the load off the gear leg further down. It's a high stress point about halfway down, especially on impact, and especially when you're standing on the brakes. It takes a lot of load there. Yes. The question is, should we change the angle of incidence on the wing? I actually don't think so. The 3 degrees twist on the wings take care of most of it. By the way, a DC-10 has 10 degrees of incidence, and we're only talking up to 5, and that's a jet. So I don't think the angle of incidence matters that much. I like having more of it, mainly to keep the nose further down on final. It makes it easier to watch and see what you're doing. But a couple of degrees, you won't know the difference.
Have a
The question is using 4130 in place of a lot of aluminum parts. The only place I could see there'd be an advantage would be the hinges on the rudder and elevator. That's all. The rest of it, the aluminum is absolutely adequate. The aluminum hinges on the rudder and elevator do tend to wear. I've had a bush, the ones on my KR1, after about 200 hours, and they're starting to feel pretty loose on my KR2 now. They've got 165 hours on it. But it's just a matter, if you bush them, it's the same thing. Did I have to have my wings inspected again after I opened it up? No, I did not. My FA inspector is a friend and a neighbor and all that, and we were talking about it, but he didn't bother coming by the day I had it open. Actually, that particular day, Jack Cox came by. He took a picture of it. It was in the last issue of Sport Aviation. He happened to be out in the West Coast for the Corona fly-in the day we were doing it. And so we just held it open that day until he came by, and then we closed him up. I think the ideal is the inboard end 5 degrees, inboard rib 5 degrees, and the outboard rib, the angle of incidence. Oh, the question is, what would be the best angle of incidence? My opinion, the original, what I had originally on both airplanes was 5 degrees inboard and 2 degrees outboard. But it's easier to set the inboard one 3 degrees and then set the ends zero, because then all you do is put a level on them. Yes. Well, it's 3 degrees of twist. The thing is, you really do need that 3 degrees of twist on the incidence. That's the most important. Well, what you make the actual angle of incidence throughout the wing, I don't think that matters anymore any that much. Probably up to 5 degrees off wouldn't hurt anything, provided both wings are the same, that is. Well, right, you can't do it on a flat table, right. You can do it on the airplane. It's really easy to do it on the airplane. Actually, one easy way of doing it is set the fuselage level, then tweak up the nose, well, actually tweak the nose down to about quarter bubble, and set the end rib zero. That's the easiest way, and it'll come out in the wash. On my KR1, he's talking about the belt drive for the magneto. Yes, as a matter of fact, all I did was when I pulled the 36 horse off is I unbolted it and slipped everything on this engine. It's still the original belt. Okay, I have the cowl off my KR1 right now if you want to look at it. On my original 36 horse, I took the impulse coupling off and put the drive pulley on in place of it. Now, on this one, all I did was I ground off the little knobs on the drive knobs on the impulse and then bolted the pulley right on the front face. No. Well, it doesn't appear to be. It's been working real good. Right. As a matter of fact, that other KR, when the one shaped like a P-51, is set up the same way. It's identical lash-up. And with the impulse left on. How much tension on the belt? Oh, just finger tight, that's all. It's no particular tension. That's one advantage of a cog belt, is just that you don't have too much slop. If you the forward the center section spars, yes, it's several pieces laminated together. Yes, you could make it one solid piece if you can find a piece of spruce that big. You're talking about the top and bottom parts. You don't make the whole spar one piece. No. Yes, you could. It's kind of hard to get a piece of spruce that big, though. That's the main reason why we laminated several sheets together. On our present wood kits, it's already done for you and milled.
Yeah.
Okay, roughly there's 150 KR1s flying and 15 KR2s. We've never found any structural failure on any of them. There's been several crashes. There's been probably hundreds of engine failures on these things. I know of one guy that the first three flights he landed dead stick. The one in Minnesota? Yeah, I heard about that one, and it's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, but he still made several flights in it, and then he lost the engine, and it, yeah, well, I don't know any details. Yeah, I heard he had one wing, 5 degrees twist, nothing on the other, something like that. That's one of the disadvantages of being able to build the airplane this way, is that you can really build a raunchy one, I guess, and still get by, but which might not be too good. Yes, I know what you mean, which way you make the laminations. You should do the laminations horizontal. Oh, no, that's right, it's vertical. I forgot. It's been a while since I made mine. But it's they're already come milled anyway and laminated in our present kit, so I didn't even look at it. All the widths are milled, except for the outer spars, which need to be tapered. But the links are not cut, no, on all the wood, on our wood kits. Yes. Oh, I know what you mean. The little wood blocks, the vertical blocks inside the wing spars, why they're different sizes. No, not really. Let's see, I forgot the dimensions offhand, but, yeah, right. Yeah, we just try to make it as light as possible. We didn't need it to go all the way through, we just put smaller pieces of wood. Every other one, I think, goes all the way to the front face. Yes, the smaller one should go all the way against the plywood skin, yes, definitely. I thought that was mentioned in the plan somewhere. Yes, well, we were talking about making a set of glider wings for the KR-1, but you have that problem of how do you land the thing unless you add spoilers, and that's kind of a complication. So far we haven't done that much with it, just made some drawings. We haven't actually built one. I have a KR-1 back in the shop right now that we were planning on putting them on. Yes. A small what? A what? Oh, putting out a drag chute, you mean? Well, that's what you'd have to go to, but still, that's expensive, and you'll ruin the thing every time. Yeah, that's right. How do you make it go around? KR2, with power on, I can hold 40 indicated. As a matter of fact, one day I was flying alongside of a Cessna 150 and was pulling a banner. They do this a lot on the West Coast. They fly up and down the beaches pulling these big banners with signs on them. And a friend of mine does this out of our airport with a Cessna 150. And when he does this, he flies full flaps and just hangs right in there. He usually runs about 45 miles an hour indicated. So I pulled up alongside him one day as he was coming up the coast through Newport. And then I tried to slow down, let him go ahead of me. Then I'd pull up and he's just waving at me. I put the gear down, everything, just pull right up alongside him. We're flying about 25 feet apart, just going along, just barely into the lawn. It's a lot of fun that way. Yes, sir. Oh. The answer to the question he asked is if the modifications put out by Gillespie have my approval. The answer is no. I don't like some of his modifications, and I don't really think he has anything that we need. If we did, we'd have put it in the plans. Yes. No, some of the things he actually fixes so they're weaker, besides adding weight. Yeah, he adds weight, too, and makes some modifications that actually we think is structurally not as good. Like, for instance, cutting the notches in the aileron arms. Yeah, right. I don't like that at all. Yeah, right. I don't like that at all. I think the chance of that arm breaking off is better than the aileron falling off. See, and you'll lose the aileron. And with differential ailerons, it might be really tricky to handle if you lost one. I've never flown with one aileron, so I don't know, but I sure don't want to try. Well, there's other ones. I haven't gone over all of them. I don't know what his modifications are on that. Oh, okay. Well, as long as you make it C-shaped, it's all right. Whether you box it in or not, it's immaterial. It'd probably be a good idea to box it in. Okay.
You have a piece of plywood up here. What we were doing is adding a 5/8 by 5/8 here, and then adding a piece of plywood here. That's the whole thing, and adding another piece of 5/8 by 5/8 glued to the side skin. But anyway, making this a full C shape now. This part isn't in the original KR1 plan. Okay, well now whether you put a piece across the back and box that in, that's your material. I think Gillespie says to do it. Oh, what do you mean? Where the engine mount bolt on?
Oh, the center thrust?
Well, the engine mounts are right here on the KR1. And then you put that bar on. And then the engine bolts on here and roughly here. So the center of thrust is roughly here.
Yeah. Well, no, the engine thrust line, I don't think you can feel it if it's plus or minus 5 inches. I doubt if you know the difference in flying. But the thing to do is get as high as possible so you have as much prop clearance as possible. That, right. Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, the top one pulls just most of the pulling. It takes a lot more load than the bottom one. That's the reason why there's been no real reason to close off the bottom one. It gets in the way of the rudder pedals anyway if you do put the top shelf here. But most of the load is taken by the top one. Yes. I cut into my gas tank for the radio. On the KR2, I had it already done last year when I was here. Yes, the radio was in. Or was it? That's right, it was sticking out. That's right, I did cut a notch in it. Yeah, it lowered it half a gallon. The radio business. That's a sore point. So for now, it's dead.
Yes. While you're talking about the center thrust again, what about a three-bladed prop rather than a two-bladed prop, just to increase that clearance?
Oh, there's plenty of clearance if you build it for this. Going to a three-bladed prop is less efficient. Of course, it looks nicer. And the four-bladed props look nicer too. I don't think you'll have a faster airplane, though. I think you'll have less efficiency with more blades. I'm an advocate of two blades. Yes. They had it in the back of the truck coming up here. The reason they didn't fly the Wix airplane up is they had nobody to pilot it. They had more airplanes than they had pilots, so they just put it on the truck and brought that up. And what happened was there was a traffic problem, and they slammed on the brakes. The whole thing tore loose in the truck. So it was a transportation problem. It landed on hit the tail and tore the whole tailwheel off. Yeah, he's not going to truck it back. That's too much trouble. He's going to fly it home. Oh, the layers in the gas tank? On the forward gas tank, it's best always, anytime you add more than one layer, just do it all at once. That way the intermission, it comes out a lighter structure to end with. On my KR1, we rebuilt the gas tank on top and did it. Instead of making a box and then lowering it on, we just glassed the whole inside, even underneath this shelf to the firewall. So the whole thing is a gas tank now. And the surprising thing is, darn thing holds over 12 gallons now, and the KR2, which is twice as wide, only holds about 10 and a half. So it shows you can get quite a bit of gas up there if you just laminate right to the side walls and then later make another top half that goes on. That's right. Just line the inside. and up to the top. We made a turtle deck on top and then cut it off, then lined the whole inside and glassed the top and then just lowered it on. You can't get to them anymore. Oh, okay, we're talking about prop tips going supersonic. Okay, well, anyway, for one thing, it's a 52-inch propeller, so it's 27 inches radius, 26, so to go supersonic on the wingtips, I think it's, what is it, 5,200 RPM, I don't run there. So. Oh, no, you're nowhere near it cruise. Yes. I had another thing I had thought of, but then I forgot. Well, anyway. Oh, sure. Yes. Well, the engine can be jockeyed around to get your weight and balance in. Some of them are coming out more tail heavy than other ones. Mine, original one, was so made just absolutely as light as possible. So I had to keep the engine mount as short as possible. And it was still nose heavy. Yeah. Yeah, okay, well, that's just a matter of adjustment, adjusting the engine, getting your CG in. How am I working the vents on the gas tanks? Well, on my KR1, I just have a vent right out the top, but on wing tanks, that's bad business because you have a low pressure up area above the wings. So what I did was, while I had the bottoms open, I epoxied in a piece of aluminum tubing that goes right almost to the top surface, and it just goes out the bottom, and it's just a little cut. If you look under any of the wings, you'll see that little piece of tubing with a sticking out the bottom. That way you get the vent in a high-pressure area instead of a low-pressure area, and it's a lot easier to pump the gas. Oh, difference in performance. Well, like I was saying, the main different reason for the increase in performance is that it's a much thinner blade. It's just much more efficient. I think if I had a fixed pitch as thin as this one, but set to my cruise conditions, which I use most of the time, it would work just as good. It's just that no one actually made one like that before. It's another 15 miles an hour cruise anyway. See, with the older type ones, I had a Hagion and one from Snohomish, Washington, and so on. The blades are so much thicker that if you go much over, say, 45 inches of pitch, you can't run it up at all on the ground. It's just no ground, no static thrust at all. I guess it's because the thickness is so on, they just don't stall, where this one does. But it's hard to prove just what's happening. I know I can get a lot more RPM. With this one at 65 inches of pitch, than I can with some of those other ones at 45. So, yes, definitely, because you get so much more RPM. Oh yeah, the rest, not all the blades stall. If you can get the RPM up around 2,800 or so, it's going to get off in a big hurry. Though I found anything over 2,400 or so is pure gravy. You just don't need it after that. Yes, definitely. Thin blade works the best. The advantage of the controllable pitch proper, adjustable ground adjustable, is like, for instance, if I'm flying with two people and I want maximum rate of performance, like at a fly-in or something like that, and crank it back to 40 inches, I got stop set there. And you can really get off the ground, even with two pretty heavy people in it. The ground runs right 250 feet or so. But with 65 inches of pitch, I normally fly it as a single place, and I can still get off pretty good. But then I don't run it up on it cruise, even though firewalled, it'll still run reasonable, 3,200 or so. Where with 40 inches of pitch, you're cruising at 3,800, and that's kind of much. Yeah. We welded the gear back on the KR2 last year. Well, it got us home, but we were awful careful with them. And then after I got it home, I planned on replacing them, but never got around to it. And second takeoff, going out of flea bob, one broke. So I had it hanging by the brake cables. I could feel it banging the bottom of the wing and knocking holes in it. So I put the gear up and made a gear up landing into Corona. Nice smooth runway. And all it did then was wore out the bottoms of the exhaust pipes. Oh, it broke at the welds. But it actually, and the ground roll, the other one popped too. Evidently, you know, from the gear retracted with the wheels out, the sudden jolt on it popped the other one too. The, both of them were broken when we brought it in the shop. And they both broke at the welds, right through the welds. The welds itself was actually a weaker material than the casting, evidently. Oh, well, they just added so much more. They've got all that extra paneling, extra body putty on the outside. It's extra layers on the outside. Just when they added the electric starter, it added 60 pounds alone that I don't have. Their alternator installation probably weighs 20 pounds. Mine weighs 4. They have a heavier engine, too. Mine has the RevMaster one that's built into the prop hub. It weighs 4.5 pounds, puts out 20 amps. Also, if you just look at the wing walks on theirs, I think it looks like it's made out of half-inch plywood. I don't even have wing walks on mine. You step right on the seat. See, and then they have all that internal paneling and the seating that mine doesn't have. So you can see where it got 150 pounds heavier. My empty weight now is 440. Theirs is 606. No, mine has a Wico alternator. Wico's in Toledo, Ohio. I think they're the manufacturers of the Eisman Magnetos also. But anyway, this is for an industrial engine. It bolts right on the flywheel of small industrial engines. That's what it's used for. It doesn't have any bearings or anything. The magnet ring just bolts on the flywheel, and the other part you bolt on some fixed part. There is no bearings in it. So what we did was we bolted this on the prop hub and just slipped the rest of it over the front shaft. Front bearing. Around 200. I think Fred Keller has more than 200 on his. I haven't talked to him yet lately. The Wix Organ KR2 has over 200 on it. Two that I know of. One of them was in Canada. I don't really know, but what I've been told was he was practicing low-level aerobatics and lost control. Just lost control of it. But I don't know any details. This engine failure is sort of a sore point with me. That's why I stopped advocating making your own engines. Too many home brews just have had too many problems. Since I switched to a RevMaster on my KR2, I've never had any problems. Once in a while, hard starting, and once in a while, stuff that you pick up on the ground before you leave. But I've never had any problems in the air with it. I've never had it miss or anything like that. Now, my original 36-horse engine, my second flight, I had an engine failure. I had a stuck carburetor float and put it down in the field. It was a good thing the glide ratio was pretty good and that it was okay for a low-time pilot, but I didn't hit anything solid. Just a rough feel, that's all. It went over on the nose, and I broke the prop, and bent a landing gear leg was all the damage. But, yeah, and then I switched over to the injector system, and that cured that problem, but I still had an old Magneto, 27-year-old Magneto in it. And as it got warmer, it got weaker and weaker, and it used to quit one cylinder at a time. Usually by the time two cylinders were out, I was well on my way home. But 5 days in a row, then, I had a total engine failure and had to glide back to the airport. 5 days in a row. And that's when I gave up and went to the Slick Mag. And since then, we started even selling Slick Mags.
Hey, could you hold altitude on two cylinders?
Yes, I could hold altitude on two cylinders, sure. Yeah. And with three cylinders, I could get 135 miles an hour out of it. Yes.
While you're on the engine, what are your personal feelings about single ignition versus...
I like single ignition best for Volkswagens, personally. I think they run better. And as long as you have a new mag on, I don't know if anybody's ever had a problem. I know since I put a new Slick on mine, it's never even had a misfire. So I figure if you just replace it every 2,000 hours, there's no sweat. Oh, well, I meant on the ground. That's a ground problem. That's not a mag problem, though. It's carburetor problems. It's probably full of dirt from the trip out. That's what we think it is. It looks like it's just coated with dirt. We're just going to have to clean it out. I was hoping to fly it this afternoon. We'll see when we get it running, how it runs. I wanted to check it all out anyway so I can get an efficiency contest tomorrow. But it looks like it'll be the next day before I get into it. Yes? Oh. For a KR1 aircraft to be checked out? any tail dragger would be okay if you want to check ride first. Most of them, right now, what they're doing, the people with no tail dragger experience, what they're doing is just driving around the airport for a couple of days till they get the feel of it. That's a really good experience. Just don't fly it, just drive it around. Of course, I heard a story up in Massachusetts. This guy that built a KR-1, complete, all the way through, and he had it out at the airport, and he was driving around the airport, started taking his flying lessons. And the instructor was eyeballing it, and he says, "Hey, how about letting me fly that thing? You know, it had never been flown." So after he'd been checked out solo, the instructor talked him into letting him fly his KR-1. So he said, "Okay," he went out and took it, flew it. He says, "Oh, heck, this is easier to fly than, I think it was a chief that he was flying. He was getting his instruction in. And he says, "That's easier to fly than this." So he says, so on his solo permit, wrote down KR-1 also. So the instructor, from what I heard later, said that was a mistake, because that's the last time he saw that guy for, he thought he had 75 hours on it. He had to come back eventually for his dual cross country. Yeah. Well, on the ground handling, I'm moving the gear in 1 inch. I doubt if it'd make that much difference. Of course, I haven't done it, so I don't know. But you do need to stiffen that slightly, just for the higher gross weights or for real rough grounds, because, well, I know I have punched holes in the tops of my wings just from flexing too much. The original design was we figured out that if you flexed it so far that you punched a hole in the wing, that was the indication you might have a permanent bend. But after doing it two or three times and not finding a permanent bend, I guess we were wrong on the calculations. Yes. Noise level? Well, my KR-1, the canopy closes real good, so it's real quiet. And it doesn't seem to make any difference to airspeed on the noise level. But the KR-2 seems to be more noisy. I don't know why. With a headset on, it's real nice, though. But I don't know. It's a lot quieter than a Cessna 150 anyway. Yes. Keeping cool in the canopy. On the KR-2, I do all my taxing with the canopy open. But once you get going, you get a nice breeze in through each wheel well, right on each side. So that's why I've never added vents. It's plenty adequate. Yes, that's why I never really closed it up. I like that. It comes in right forward of the gear when the gear is up, and comes in on both sides right by your knees. And it works great. It what? It probably does. Yeah, probably. But it hasn't been any problem. No, it hasn't hurt the structure. I use two layers right there anyway, because mainly because you got the foam cut away so far for the landing gear bar. When the gear is up, it comes to within a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch of the outer skin. So right there, you have to add two layers anyway. So you're really not relying on the foam in that particular spot. I'll tell you, you know, where I am in Huntington Beach, even in January, you're out flying, you know, it might be 70 degrees on the ground. You just go up about 6,000 feet, and it's down to, like, 10. So, yeah, I'll tell you, I had to wear a winter coat a couple of times. See, but, yes. Deer and Tree Lake and Poza, well, I'm not authority in that. They look pretty well alike to me. I know there's a big difference in the price. Yeah, I'm using the Poza. Yes, so I never tried a lake, so I don't know. I ordered one once, and it's been 2 years now, and I haven't got it yet, so I don't know. He wanted to know if there's a difference between the lake and the Posa carburetors, and I've never tried the lake, so I don't know. Yeah. In your chapter. Yeah. Yeah. The kindling temperature on the foam depends on the additives they add. This green kind we're using right now, according to the spec sheets, is real high kindling also. So, but all of it is a lot better than fabric. So, yeah. So I don't know. Yes. I think there's advantages to individual brakes, yes. I haven't really needed them, though, because I normally just you only use the brakes on straight and level slowdowns on final, you know, on just stopping it on the runway. I don't use them for steering at all. You've got a nice positive steerable tailwheel, and it drives around like a go-kart. So so I've never really needed differential brakes, but if that's what you like, there's no reason why you can't add them on. This P-51 out there has differential brakes. Yes? Well, actually, the color has nothing to do with whether they add the additive or how much. It's whether they add it or not. It has nothing to do with the color. Yeah, well, we are. The tan doesn't have it, and the green does. They don't put any in the tan out where we are. So I don't know. It's a different manufacturer here. Yeah, right. Doesn't make any difference after you glass it. The kind we're using is made by CPR Upjohn, and they don't put it in their brown one, and they do in their green one, so I don't know. Say these other companies out here in the Midwest, probably it's the opposite. Yes?
Do you have any comments about changes or errors in your plans as far as
the new design? You're talking about errors in the KR1 plans or two?
Yes.
Two? Yeah, there's a few dimensions that are slightly off. Well, the reason we don't is because we sell so many of them, and only something like 5% of them build them, so we don't really worry about it. The ones that are really building, we get the letters and the questions and all that, and we take care of those right away. And the rest of them, we figure, well, all they did was they probably didn't even read them. So there's no sense keeping track of those. And, of course, all the ones that we sell the kits to, of course, we keep track of. Yep. So, no, we don't have an actual update. Now, there is a newsletter out right now that we do give them all the information. And we ought to say something about that. We've got some copies of the first two issues out in the airplane. Anybody could have one if they want. Just go over and get one. The editor of this newsletter is Butch Coppy, and he's out here somewhere. We can catch him. Oh, here he is. Oh, he's hiding under the table. Just corner him if you want to subscribe to that newsletter. He's sitting right here. Hey, Butch, would you stand up so they can see who you are? Right. Catch him and get him your name and address if you want to be in on this newsletter. See, and any time we come across anything like that at all, we give him the information. And, of course, quite a few of the builders write him and tell him about things they've run into, and he elaborates on them, and it probably helped quite a few other people. That might be a good way to go. Yep. Oh, I'd have no comments. I think it's a good way to go, really. So, the question is, he noticed other people like the Warbirds using our construction methods. But I figured that was only a matter of time when we first started flying the KR-1. That, hey, this is the way to go. It makes it not only easier, but you get so much better performance. You can fare everything so much better. It's easier to repair. So it was only a matter of time that quite a few other designers would pick up our methods, incorporate them. Oh, no, it hasn't hurt me a bit. Yeah, probably. I haven't objected. I go over there and visit the guys, and we're friends. No sweat. Yes, sir. Well, like you were saying, I'm not an engine man. I've done both. I had a carburetor on my original one, and then I switched to the injector, and it cured most of my problems. I still have some problems. I don't think there's any perfect solution yet. Some of the guys with carburetors have flat spots in them too, once in a while. I prefer the injector because it's so much simpler, and I don't like fooling with carburetor heat and so on like that. So far, I haven't found any carburetor ice in it, so I don't know. I think the injector is more power, but I think it also burns more fuel. Yeah. Right. Anyway, I've been using the injector successfully. I think sometimes it's harder to start with the injector. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the trim actuator in my car, too? That's a KPS9 Craft servo for a radio control model without the electronics, just the drive. And so I got electric trim. Yes, the big one. It's a model airplane servo. And that way I have a push-button electric trim on my KR2. And it's fast, too. Well, you buy them without the guts are around $12. It's a Kraft KPS9, actually. But it normally runs off about 5 volts, and I'm running it off 12. So what I did was I put a resistor in series to slow it down. If you want to do it really right, well, you could put a chopper circuit in and run it pulse width. That way you can control the speed of it. But I didn't bother. I just wired it in with a toggle switch that's momentary in up and down position. Yeah, I noticed on the photos it is, but when I'm actually flying and I look back at it, it's straight and level. It's just just when they snap the picture, I'm maneuvering, yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't appear to be that way in actual flight. Yeah, but they did catch it with it down a little bit on several photos. Yes? KR1 doesn't have electric trim. I just got two cables. I got the push rod and model airplane push rod the same way, but then I got two U-Control cables up to a handle that you pull back and forth. Open up the canopy on the KR1, and you'll see that handle on the left side. Yeah, it works good. As a matter of fact, on the KR1, that handle works just as good as the elevator stick for flying the airplane. You can fly with either one of them. Only it stays wherever you leave it, and the airplane stays there. Of course, the KR1 is kind of a different airplane to fly anyway. It's you trim it up for a straight and level flight, sitting back, relaxed, and it'll let go. And that darn thing will hold for a long time. And after a while, it starts dropping a wing and turning. You just move your head over to the left, say, quarter of an inch, and that picks the wing back up, and it drifts right back in, and you move your head back, and it locks on again. And it'll put you to sleep. It's just like having an autopilot. It just flies hands off. Now, on the two, I can't do that because you're sitting off center, and it just you fly hands off, and it just might turn either way, and you can't do anything about it except grab the stick again. Yes? Yeah, okay, you like, for instance, sometimes you might have the right tank full, and you might sometimes have a passenger, and sometimes you're sitting on the left side. As far as I'm concerned, it's like a half an ounce extra stick pressure, and as soon as you find straight and level, it disappears. So I don't think you need an aileron trim. It's hard to notice, though it won't hold a heading if you let go of the stick. I'll have to admit that. Not like the KR1 will. The question is, have we had to re-rig a wing because of too much washout on one side than the other side? That's something you catch when you build the airplane, not when you fly it. You set them both the same. Whatever your twist is on one side, that's you set the other one. One way of doing it is to put the wing on before you put the tip on. You have a line drawn on the end rib, say, level it, and then go and see that the rib goes on the other side exactly level. That's all. Yeah, you glued a level on? Okay. Oh, no. Oh, I see. Oh, I imagine 1 degree won't. You'll never see it, even in the aileron movement. So, no, it's not that critical. But I sure wouldn't want 5 degrees on one side, not on the other. Because then you'd be running full aileron straight and level. And I've heard of one in KR1 being built that way. No, it's on that alternator's on this one. The KR1 still has that Honda alternator bolted on the end of the crankshaft. Yeah. No, that's okay. Yeah, you can add spacers between the engine mount. If you weaken the channel, I draw an extra hole in it. Well, if you look at my channels on my KR1, I got the top of the cowl off right now. It looks like Swiss cheese. I've got so many extra holes because I've moved it around several times. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. It probably didn't, but you're going to have problems pushing it and keeping it straight. So, but it probably didn't weaken it any, no. It's pretty well oversized anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this takes up a lot of the shock, too, that little bit of bending. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do want it flexible. Mine is slightly flexible, too, because I can take the engine, shake it up and down, and get a little bend out of it, out of that bar, which is good. That's right. Oops. Oops, excuse me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm getting some slop in mine. It's been hundreds of times. But I notice after it starts getting a little bit sloppy, it doesn't get any worse. But I just torque up on those bolts. The wings are so short that there's no play anyway on the wing tips. Well, I torque them up, and then I shake the wing tips, and if they don't shake, then that's okay. I haven't had any problems. Now, if you had a real long sailplane-type wing, then it would be a problem. Yes. That'd probably help. Heat treating the 4130 probably would help. We didn't on ours, mainly because we didn't need that extra strength. Yes. Oh, I see. Okay. I see. So you should sort of... Sure. Well, there's quite a few techniques you can use. We actually stapled some pieces of wood down to the ground. Actually, hammered stakes in the ground because we did it outside. And stapled them to these boards. And that, until we got completely done, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Oh, we were working on, I'm an electronics engineer, and we have a small electronics shop in my shop. We've been making counters for CBers. But so we took a crack at trying to make a 720-channel comm. But it turned out to be more of a hassle than anything. So for now, it's dead. We've stopped it. Actually building it and getting the reliability, getting the manufacturers to give us parts that would work consistently, so on like that. We were using the latest integrated circuits, and we found some that weren't so reliable, mainly because they weren't mass-produced yet. Sure, I'll take one more question. Oh, that question's already asked. Is the availability of Dynel. So far, we can get all we want. There's more than one manufacturer. And as far as I know, even Union Carbide is still making it. Yes, I know. The plans? Oh, hey. Okay, well. Okay. Hey, well, anyway, I've got plenty of flyers here if anybody wants one, and I am selling plans here. So that's it. Pardon? I just went to one.